This is Hacker Public Radio episode 3358 for Wednesday, the 16th of June 2021. Today's show is entitled, Blast'em, a wicked awesome Sega Genesis / Mega Drive emulator. It is hosted by Sigflup and is about 22 minutes long and carries a clean flag. The summary is, this is an interview with the author of Blast'em, a Sega Genesis / Mega Drive emulator.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by Archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. My name is Sigflup Sinislabel, and this episode is we're gonna talk about Blast'em, which is this terrific emulator for the Sega Genesis / Mega Drive. We'll be talking to the author of Blast'em, and so let's get started. Hey, I'm here with Mike. Mike is author of Blast'em, which is a Sega Genesis and Sega Mega Drive emulator. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. It's pretty warm here, so that's good. It's usually pretty cold, but so how long, out of curiosity, how long did it take you to write this emulator?
Well, I started it way back in 2012.
Oh, okay.
So I've been working on it a pretty long time. Obviously, you know, it's a side project, so it's, you know, a little off and on. And I think the first release was roughly a year after I started. It was pretty rough, though.
Okay. Have you written any other emulators? Is this your first one?
Sort of. So my first attempt at an emulator was for the Master System, but it wasn't... I wrote some Z80 emulation code, but at the time I was pretty young. I didn't really get most graphics APIs, so I was struggling to, like... Yeah. Do any of the other parts. And then in college, I was talking with Nemesis, who's I don't know his real name, but, you know, he's pretty notable in, like, the Sonic hacking community and the Sega retro community. And we talked about collaborating on a Dreamcast emulator. This is probably, like, 2002, 2003, sometime around then. I still didn't know too much about graphics API, so the idea was I would take on the CPU and he was going to work on the GPU stuff.
That's an SH4, is it, on the Dreamcast?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I wrote an interpreter, so, you know, it's probably wouldn't have been fast enough back then, since, you know, computers weren't quite as fast in 2002.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
For the SH4. And it worked well enough to, like, there's this one demo that just writes directly to the frame buffer.
No. Okay.
Those little plasma effects. So it was good enough for that. But so those are the only two, like, emulator projects I've worked on before Blast'em.
Okay. Yeah, I found Blast'em to be very accurate and very speedy, which is it's always a compromise, speed versus accuracy. And I've noticed that it plays the Overdrive demos.
Yeah. Most of those were kind of a pain.
Yep.
In a lot of ways, I think, you know, there's definitely a tension between accuracy and speed, but it's sort of more like a triangle where, you know, there's accuracy, speed, and then, like, there's another dimension that's sort of like effort or complexity of the implementation.
Okay.
Yes.
That's interesting. ERG866 is DMATRIC. It runs that where you write you make a DMA transfer with an increment of zero from the CRAM to the frame, like, to this picture. So I'm amazed that works. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, the trickiest part about that is all the factor, the timing factors that get, like, to make the synchronization part work. Like, once it starts, it's pretty simple because the DMA engine just goes at a certain speed and it replaces the background color.
Yeah.
And that's pretty easy to get once you know, like, you know, where the refresh cycles are. That interrupts the transfer. But the tricky part is, like, make sure all the things that affect CPU timing are correct, and then, you know, making sure that how that interacts with the VDP for, like, the synchronization aspect, where it, like, fills up the FIFO and is depending on those, you know, external slots being in sort of particular places to free up the CPU. You know, that was a little tricky.
I imagine. How did you debug this? Do you have, like, a Genesis, like an EverDrive cart or something like that? I'm wondering. Because for me, I go through, like, write, test, debug, that sort of iteration. And I'm wondering what tools you use to debug things.
Yeah, it varies quite a bit depending on the problem. The toughest thing to debug in sort of recent memory was someone reported that in, like, I think Road Rash 3, when you're in, like, the bike shop menu, and you switch between categories, there's, like, this little artifact on the screen. It's, like, only there for, like, one frame.
Okay.
And it's, like, so first off, it's, like, does this actually only happen in Blastem? Does it happen in the hardware? So it's, like, I had to get, like, my capture card is kind of cruddy.
Yeah.
It doesn't really support 240p properly, so I had to, like, you know, like, do a capture and then pull out, you know, deinterlace the frame so I could get, because it treats it like it's 480i instead of 240p, so it's interlacing it.
Yeah.
So I, you know, pulled the frame back and I was like, okay, yes, this is not happening. and so then I'm, like, you know, going, disassembling the game and trying to figure out what it's actually doing during this. And so there's, like, this sort of back and forth between looking at the disassembled code.
Yeah.
Possibly, like, so Blastem has a little debugger built into it. It's not great, but it generally works for my needs. So using that debugger to sort of trace through it, and then, like, sometimes actually, you know, running the emulator in itself in a debugger, sometimes at the same time that I'm using the debugger in the emulator as well.
Yeah.
And trying to figure out what happened, what's going on. And eventually what became clear is that, when it does this transition between categories, it's not very careful about when it updates the name table. So, you know, for those that aren't familiar with, like, the Genesis graphics system, you know, it's like, it's a bunch of little 8x8 tiles, and the background layers have, like, specify which tile they use. And so when it was updating that mapping of which tile was used, it ended up doing it while in the middle of the display. So basically there was, like, a race between, you know, the updates from the CPU and the display scanning out. But for some reason on the console, this didn't cause the same artifact I was seeing on Blastem, and the question was why.
Yeah.
And I don't remember exactly how I figured this, but eventually it occurred to me that the name table entries are 16 bits wide.
Yeah.
But the VRAM is only 8 bits wide, so it can only write half of each entry at a time.
Okay.
And I'm like, well, I wonder if it's because it actually is doing the two bytes of the words in the opposite order, which for most things doesn't matter at all, because it's, you know, and it turns out that was the problem.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it seems hard to figure out. I noticed that you are doing remote debugging through GDP or GDB.
Yeah, I mean, that one isn't so much for me. That was sort of like, because generally speaking, when I have a problem, I don't have the source code. I just have, like, here's a game or a demo that's, like, a binary. And so I have, you know, so having GDB access isn't super helpful. But for, you know, one of the nice things about having an accurate emulator is that when you're developing new code for the Genesis or the Mega Drive, you're much more likely to run into the same bugs that you'll run into in hardware than an inaccurate emulator. So,
yep.
And it's easier to debug in the emulator than it is on hardware. So I realized it wouldn't be that hard to take the debugger I already had and then adapt it so it could support GDB remote stuff.
Okay.
So that's super useful if you're using, you know, SGDK or some other C toolchain. developed for the Mega Drive.
Yep. I noticed it seems to be very heavy on x86. You have files in the source code like M68K to x86 and stuff like that. I'm wondering why is it so dependent on x86?
Well, so when I set off to make Last.M, there were sort of like a few different motivations in mind. So one of them was Mir, who used to go by Bew at the time, wrote this article for Ars Technica about BSNES and how, you know, accuracy takes all this power, and I'm like, I'm, you know, typical arrogant programmer stuff. I'm sure I could make it fast and accurate, right?
Yeah.
And I focus on the Genesis because that's what I grew up with rather than the SNES. So I wanted to pursue, you know, more advanced techniques that could potentially make it faster, and a Dynarec or JIT, you know, where you dynamically generate machine code at runtime is one potential way to do that. I wanted to learn about how those worked. Because, like, generally speaking, it's considered not to be worthwhile to do a Dynarec or a JIT for old CPUs, like, you know, the original 68000 or the Z80.
Yep.
But I wanted to learn it anyway, so I figured, well, let me try to figure out how to do this. So I wrote a Dynarec, and I didn't use an existing like CodeGen library, so I'm doing my own CodeGen. So if I want to support multiple CPUs, I have to write that code.
Yeah.
I did try to port to ARM at one point, but I think at some point I decided that I wasn't really happy with the way I had written my Dynarec at all, and I was going to sort of put off the whole ARM question until I got around to rewriting the whole thing.
Okay.
So yeah, there is actually a branch where I like yank out my Dynarecs, and I pulled Musashi, which is a open source, permissively licensed 68000 emulator, and the Z80 emulator from Maine, which I think was relicensed to be BSD as well.
Okay.
So there's sort of like a unsupported branch that'll run on non x86 CPUs, but it's a little janky, and it's sort of like a temporary hack until I get around to like doing it properly.
Okay. All right. So you're using MAME Z80 code in your project, is what you're saying?
Only in this sort of hacky branch.
Oh, okay.
So if you go down, if you go download the official releases of Blast.M, they'll be using my Dynarec that I wrote.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm noticing like z80.cpu, which looks like a machine description, and so I assume then you wrote a parser for that too to do your thing.
Yeah. So sort of what I'm thinking for like replacing my Dynarecs is I want to have like some kind of domain-specific language that describes how the CPU works, and then I want to generate both an interpreter and a Dynarec from that one description.
Yep, sounds good.
For those that aren't familiar with like with Dynarecs, it's like, why would you need an interpreter too? And the answer is, generally speaking, like generating code and then executing it is slower than just interpreting it.
Yes.
You know, it's helpful to have both so that you can, code that's only run once or twice, you can run it through the interpreter, and then code that runs a bunch of time, you can translate it.
Okay.
My Dynarec doesn't have that right now, which sometimes causes some performance problems, but... So that's sort of the idea with the Z80.cpu. It's supposed to be a DSL. So it works well enough that I have a Z80 implementation that works. I started on a 68K one, but it's not done.
Oh, okay.
And right now it only generates an interpreter. It doesn't generate a Dynarec, so.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. I don't remember where I heard this from, but GCC uses machine description. It's the C parser and the machine description parser. And they kind of meet up where the tree, like the parse tree, matches. Which is kind of interesting, but that's neither here nor there. So you're using an interpretive 68000 in the version right now, right?
No. So like the stable release, there's a Dynarec for the Z80 and the Dynarec for the 68000, but they're it's x86 only.
Okay.
Now there's this branch called MAME interp, which uses the new Z80 core. It used to use the name Z80 core. I misspoke earlier. And then it uses Musashi, which MAME also uses for 68,000.
Yeah, Musashi. That's what I was thinking about, Musashi. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, so that's only in this sort of MAME, this weird MAME interp branch.
Okay.
Yeah, so if you want to build for ARM, you have to use this sort of funky branch that I only update sometimes. But the main releases are still using my the DynaRex that I wrote.
Okay.
For both CPUs.
Cool beans. How is the 2612? How is emulating for that?
You know, I think the most painful part is that it's like just the audio emulation in general.
Oh,
it's hard to know what's wrong when something
is wrong.
Doesn't sound right.
Oh yeah, totally. I completely agree.
Like, you know, okay, if it's graphics, it's like, okay, here's this, you know, this error, like these pixels look wrong, right? So it's like, well, I can say what layer generated those pixels pretty easily.
Yep.
And, you know, what part of the, you know,
For everyone listening, the 2612 is the YM2612. It's the sound chip in the Sega Genesis, which is a 6-channel FM chip. But the, yeah, so debugging that, when something's wrong, it's really hard to figure out where it's coming from. Is what you're saying?
I mean, yeah, it's really tough to debug. I mean, fortunately, a lot of the hard stuff was figured out by the time I started. So, Nemesis, who I mentioned before, originally we're going to collab on that Dreamcast emulator a long time ago. He was also working on an accurate Genesis emulator called Exodus.
Oh, okay.
And I think I must have missed it at the time when I was deciding to start Blast Them, but. Anyway, so he did a bunch of reverse engineering work, and I really benefited a lot from all the work he did. I mean, I had to do a bunch of reverse engineering myself, but it definitely saved me a lot of all the work he did saved me a lot of time, especially on the YM2612.
Okay.
I mean, the documentation is like hard to like go through because it's basically there's this giant thread on this forum called Sprites Mind.
Yep.
And it's like, I don't know, like 200 pages or something, and there's I had to go through all the pages and like bookmark the ones that actually had like real info, and then sometimes like, you know, a few pages later it's like, oh wait, that was all wrong, here's the real and then there was still some stuff that was broken that I couldn't figure out, and so I ended up making this little program that basically for each parameter it would iterate through all the settings, you know, and I compared a recording of that running on the real hardware to running on my emulator, and it's like, okay, at this particular point, when I change this setting to this, that's when it gets messed up.
Yeah.
And I fixed a lot of issues for that.
Okay.
Yeah, and since then, I've occasionally, there's a couple of attempts to look at, like a photograph of the silicon die and reverse engineer the chip from that.
Okay.
So on Sprites Mind, there's like, I don't know how to pronounce his username, it's like Sorayan or something like that. He made I think a VHDL or Verilog, which are hardware description languages, implementation of just the operator unit.
Oh, okay, cool. That's awesome.
And then this Russian developer goes by NukeYT or NukeyT, I'm not sure. He made like sort of a I guess it could be she. I'm not sure. I know they're pronounced, but whichever. They made a like sort of like a very literal like C translation of the hardware.
Okay.
So I've used both of those as reference occasionally to find like the last, you know, some of the last few bugs. It's still not 100% perfect. I got a couple bugs I still need to track down. But it's in pretty good shape now.
Okay. Cool. Are there any games or cartridges or ROMs or whatever that you are working on right now? Like, what's the compatibility rate now nowadays? Is it close to 100%, or what do you think?
It should be pretty close to 100%. I think probably the biggest issue, there's a few games that you need certain peripherals to use. Like, I don't have any light gun support just because I haven't gotten around to it. And so, for instance, like the Menacer 6 game cartridge, you can't play that at all unless you have a light gun attached.
Oh, yeah.
So that doesn't really work. I've been collecting carts, you know, since I started this project, and one game I randomly picked up, I think it's like Championship Bowling or something, Okay. I might have an issue. I have to verify that I dumped it correctly, and I'm just not misunderstanding how the game works. But it seemed like it froze up, so that... But other than stuff like that, it's pretty close to 100%. I actually just... this is not released yet, but I've recently added support for a very rare game called Outback Joey, which has this goofy exercise peripheral that's required to make it run.
Okay.
So that's probably the latest game that I've made work, and that's not fully released, though it's sort of in the nightlies, not that anybody has the dump yet.
Okay. The thing I like about the Sega Genesis is it's just ROMs. It's not like the Nintendo where you have ROMs and they have mappers and stuff like that, so you don't have to emulate different cartridges. What's the graphics cartridge with the graphics chip? Virtual Racer or something like that?
Yeah, Virtual Racer. That's another game I don't support because I haven't finished emulating the SVP chip, which is like a DSP that's in the cart.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, do you have anything that you want to say to the people of Hacker Public Radio?
happy to talk to everyone. Last time has been a very rewarding project to work on. I hope it's useful for people in the future.
Yeah. Okay, so the website is retrodev.com/blastem. Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay, all right. That'll be in the show notes. And... yeah, thank you for the interview.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.